Your flip is only as good as the people who help you with it, like contractors, agents, the whole list that's involved in the supply chain. And if you don't have a great eye for talent or you haven't worked on your own leadership and development skills, your flip is going to be much harder. Tarek says that he struggled with that at first and ultimately had to use executive recruiters to get the right folks, but it can be done. So let his story be an example. Building the right team might mean taking a hit on the margin at first, but if you do it right, you can more than make up for it in the future.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. Today we're talking about frugal house flipping.
Ooh.
Yeah, so this is actually based on an article that's in the latest November-December issue of Success magazine, and it features Tarek El Moussa. And many of you may remember him from a show that he used to have with his ex-wife, Christina, called Flip or Flop. It was on, what, HGTV,
I think? Yeah. Actually, I think it's still on.
Oh, you is
should
it?
Probably check.
Oh, yeah. Because they took a break and then they came back.
And then they came back. It's still on. It's running. And there are like several other versions, like a franchise.
There are, yeah. But the latest issue of the magazine includes an article about how to flip houses while keeping your bottom line top of mind, which rhymes. So good on me.
Good for you.
But yeah, we're talking about frugal house flipping.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. And I don't know why it was a bit of a feeling. It could just be like where I am emotionally, but like it was so cool. Like I knew it was coming. So obviously we subscribe to Success Magazine. They are the sponsor for this podcast, and we've got a really awesome partnership with them. But it's always really cool kind of getting the magazine in the mail. It's the only one that I actually subscribe to, right? So it's not like we get a lot. So maybe that's what it is. I do remember years ago when I would have two or three different magazine subscriptions. Now I don't have any. So this is the only one that comes. So I'm like a kid on Christmas every time I kind of see it. And then we can really flip through it and see like what's going on with the company and what's going on with the brand, what they're talking about. So it's really, really cool. So it was exciting to see it. And it's really just a great reminder of like how fortunate we are to be a part of this sort of evolution of the brand. So it's really, really cool. And so if you're listening out there, you can subscribe as well. You can obviously go online and read some of the articles, but you get a lot more. And it's a completely different experience when you are reading it and sort of holding the magazine in your
hands. Bring paper back.
Bring paper. Let's make paper sexy again.
Yeah. I also just love how they continue to find relatable and modern experts. Bethany Mota is on the cover, and I wasn't familiar with her before reading the magazine, but she's a huge YouTube star, and she's telling the story about how she became a YouTubepreneur, which is something I just made up. I don't know what they're officially called. I think they're just called YouTubers.
Yeah.
But YouTubepreneur sounds much cooler.
That's a bit more mature. But that's relevant because I do think there are a lot of people out there who would sort of hear that and think that it is... There's still, I think, a significant percentage of people that would be dismissive.
Oh, yeah. Like people aren't making crazy bank on YouTube every day.
Multiples of millions.
They just released an article that I said, I think there's like... Let me not try to quote this article, but YouTube released an article about how many people are able to make full-time living off of YouTube, the platform.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So shout out to Success Magazine, obviously, for partnering with us on this project and several other projects. Also, shout out to the Success Achievers community. For those who don't know, we actually don't spend a lot of time talking about it, but basically the Success Achievers community is an online community of high achievers under the umbrella of the Success Magazine brand. It is free. You can basically get there and log in or create an account by going to achievers.success.com. But basically, you can follow different themes, whether it's, you know, your career or wanting to be a coach or real estate or money. They've got a variety of topics, and you can connect with like-minded people near you. You can connect with the larger community. And we actually do a monthly book giveaway. We've partnered with our publisher, which is Penguin Random House, and the Portfolio Imprint to give away a free book in the Success Achievers community every single month. And so it's lots of fun stuff going on there. So if you're a listener and you enjoy this podcast, head on over there and you might get even more new things or find new people that are just like you and learn something in the process. But all that to say, really, really happy and proud to be partnering with Success and all of the things that they're doing. And of course, really loving the latest episode, and tons of good stuff in there.
Latest issue.
Sorry. And also really loving the latest issue.
All right. So let's get started with the article. I love the first question the writer asked, like out the gate, which was, what's the difference between frugal house flippers and cheap house flippers?
Yeah.
Because I think the distinction is so important. And so the way Tariq responds, he says that frugal is putting in work to save money, but not by cutting corners. Frugal investors spend time shopping and negotiating deals, getting discounts, whereas cheap house flippers cut corners by doing things like painting over old wallpaper or hiring unlicensed workers or working on the house without the right permits. And I just couldn't agree with that more. Like, I rarely identify with the word frugal just because it sounds kind of frumpy. But in this case, I 100% do. If I were a house flipper, I'd totally fall into the frugal category.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would also say I don't know any house flippers who don't sort of associate themselves or think of themselves as frugal. It's one of those things where I think a lot of people think that if you're a house flipper, you're making big bucks and you don't even have to worry about it. It's like you bought a property for a couple hundred dollars. You're going to sell it for multiples of thousands, but you don't have to worry about it. But I don't think people realize that with house flipping, there's a lot of moving parts, and all of those parts cost money. Time is working against you. So you have to be frugal in order to maintain your margin, because it can go from sugar to bleep very, very quickly. So no, I completely agree with that, and glad that you found an opportunity to embrace the word frugal.
Only because Tariq said it.
Maybe just because Tariq said it. Okay. But no, I think you absolutely have to be frugal, which is funny. I was thinking about, I think it was just the other day, we were having a conversation. I don't know how we stumbled into a little bit of a mini doomsday scenario conversation, but I think I was just thinking, what if it all falls apart? What if this doesn't happen? And I kind of, like, one of the first things that popped in my mind is, you know, I mean, if I had to, I'd get back into real estate, and I would most likely get into house flipping. I mean, I think I would actually enjoy it. I'm in a much different place than I was when I first started with real estate investing, where we were buy and hold investors. And so this was a timely article because it sort of reminded me, I wanted to see, like, what's changed, if anything's changed, what's different with when it comes to house flipping. And looks like not much, but I was really grateful for some of the tips that Tariq introduced in the article.
Yeah, we were never house flippers, but like you said, we were real estate investors, and we did a 5-year stint. And I would probably categorize us as frugal investors.
Oh, sure.
I remember one of the things that I noticed early on was how wildly different estimates from different contractors would be.
Yeah.
Like, we'd have a project and we get, you know, 3 different estimates, like all the message boards taught us to do. And the difference between the top and the bottom estimate would be like multiples. Like, the top would be 2 to 3 times more expensive than the lowest option. And so we'd usually end up picking the one in the middle. But like Tariq says, we'd have to add in some sweat equity. Like, we'd have to be those frugal flippers, whether it was sweeping up behind them or running to Home Depot to pick up the paint, or, you know, paying for the materials in advance because they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
There were all kinds of little tasks, and we essentially became part of their team in order to get the project done and under budget. Like, you know, I didn't mind it, but I also did not enjoy it. And so if I had the budget, I'm not sure that I wouldn't just opt for like the white glove service and be a less than frugal flipper.
Yeah, I think it's a case by case scenario, right? Like, I'm not going to say that we were the most successful real estate investors. I think we had a great run and it was awesome while we did it. I think we just sort of wanted a different life. There were times on certain projects or rehabs during our tenure, if you will, where I was more willing to sort of jump in and, you know, clean up or, you know, grab a paintbrush and do any of those other things. And there were days where I was absolutely not willing to do that at all. And we were outsourcing everything and, you know, not even sort of comparison shopping. Let's just focus on getting it done because time is of the essence and we sort of got to get this property on the market or get a renter in here or hand over something to a management company. So yeah, I'm all for, in some cases, sacrificing margin, because in some cases time is way more important than a couple hundred or even a couple $1,000s, because you know that if you can sell it, then you might have an opportunity to get that money back.
Yes. So speaking of margin, in the article, Tariq actually gives 5 areas to focus on if you want to increase your profit margin on a flip. They're landscaping, bathrooms, material, backyards, and closet furnace.
Interesting.
I had never heard of before reading the article. So let's go through each of these. Starting with landscaping, he says, the second you start working on a flip, the first thing you should do is put down seed and fertilizer so that while you're remodeling the house, which can take 2 to 4 months, the grass has time to grow. This is a great way to cut a corner without spending a fortune putting in sod. And this is super smart. Like, I never really thought about it because we've owned townhouses where the landscaping was kind of covered by the HOA. We've never had to, like, actively do it. But, you know, I'm sure you're going to make a food reference or some cooking reference about how important the sequence of task is whenever you're completing a big project like this.
I actually wasn't thinking about food, but you're absolutely right. Like, so the first thing that came to mind is preheating an oven.
Yes.
Right? Because it's like, you know, most people, you want to get those things. And most people, the first thing they do is they rip out the recipe, they pull it out, and they start organizing all of the ingredients, and everything is there. And then it's like they turn on the oven. And then mm-hmm. they got to wait mm-hmm. like maybe 5 to 10 minutes for the oven to preheat, right? And so one of the things I used to do when I used to cook professionally, or not I used to do, but well, actually, in some cases, I did. That's actually the very first thing that you do. You walk into a cold kitchen, and the very first thing you do is you turn on the ovens, because it doesn't matter. You know you're going to need it. Mm-hmm. So, I thought that was a really, really brilliant one. And to your point, we hadn't really given that much thought because we've always sort of worked with condominiums or townhomes, and we didn't really have to worry about landscaping or yards or any of that stuff.
But so, there was stuff that we did think through, like, you know, when to paint the walls. It's like, well, let's not paint the walls until the very end because you don't want them to get scuffed up.
Right,
you know, we had popcorn ceilings at one point, and so scraping those created a ton of dust, and so it was like, well, we're not going to put the new flooring in until, you know, we scrape the ceilings. And so once you have that big list, that big project list, make sure that you also spend some time going through it to make sure that the tasks are in the right order so that you don't then have to risk ruining something else that you're putting in.
Yeah, those are the things that really just come with experience. And I think that's why so many people get burned. They walk in, they think it's easy, they've got all the supplies, and that's great. But what really sort of makes these projects work is your ability to know how to sequence what to do what, when to call this person, or even little things. We were just having a conversation about this the other day with a gas company. Like, just, it might take you 7 days
to get the gas
turned on.
The window for contractors' availability. There's some people you can call and they'll be here in 2 hours.
Correct.
There are other people it's like, oh, we needed to know you needed us 3 weeks ago.
Correct. So it's great that the house is great and it's staged and everything is wonderful, but you're not going to have any gas for another week.
Or internet.
Exactly. So, anyway, great tips by Tarek. All right, so let's move on to the other ones. The second one was about bathrooms.
Yes.
No surprise here. If you know anything about flipping houses or sort of the parts of a home that are the most important, it is bathrooms. I was a little surprised by this, though, because I expected, or maybe I'm just a little biased, but I thought he would have mentioned kitchens. But I think he's right, actually, because it's fair to say people spend a lot of time in their kitchens, but I think people also spend a lot of time in their bathrooms. And what I think is unique about bathrooms is that it's oftentimes, or in many cases, not a shared space. Like, a kitchen is very much a shared space for everyone. You're going to have a few people that are going to say, that's my kitchen.
Right.
But like, you certainly say, this is my bathroom, right? This is my bathroom.
Or my sink.
Your bathroom, my sink, your sink. And so it certainly makes sense why that would be a focus area. But also, just from a standpoint of protecting margin and making things profitable, there's often times like bits and pieces within the bathroom that you can salvage that often make the opportunity to flip it much, much easier. So that's really, really cool. I'm glad that he mentioned that.
Yeah, like, I completely agree with this one, because if kitchens are the heart of the home, then bathrooms got to be like the spleen or the lungs, you know, just some sort of vital organ that doesn't get nearly as much love as like the heart. You know,
don't ever say spleen on this podcast again.
Bathrooms are the spleen of the home. It's going to be a thing. Okay. But upgraded bathrooms were the thing that I was most looking forward to when we moved into our current home.
Yeah.
And they're in the top three list of things that I'm looking forward to when we move into the next one. So I completely agree with him on this. The kitchen is important, but the bathroom is the spleen or the lungs. All right. Let's take a quick break and then we'll share the rest of Tarek's list when we get back. Okay, the third thing to focus on if you are interested in increasing your profit margin in your flips is materials. So his advice is to not make this exclusively a numbers game. And again, I couldn't agree more. He says, even though you're buying cheap material, it still needs to have a high-end design. So for us, we just did a, not just did, but a couple of years ago when we were remodeling our condo, we did a full kitchen gut job. And the kitchen that we put in was actually an IKEA kitchen, which are significantly cheaper than like custom cabinetry.
Yep.
But we didn't want it to look like it was anything less than custom cabinetry. So we spent time being really thoughtful about the design, added modern elements like those, you know, no slam, kind of soft closed drawers and the hidden compartment for the garbage can. And I actually spent like a grip on ordering these luxury bronze cabinet pulls. They had some weight to them. They were like very expensive, but every time you touched them, you would feel like it felt like metal. It felt heavy. And I remember splurging on them because I thought it was worth it. I truly think of like fixtures as like the earrings of a kitchen. And so you put this outfit together, it's like the last thing you want to do is put it in basic earrings. Although I personally wear basic earrings. I want more for my kitchen. I want better for my kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't have a comparison or a food reference for earrings.
And
I certainly
like
don't want to go back into body
or
organs.
Garnish.
Okay. No, I do remember that process. I remember thinking of looking at the alternatives to your point. I mean, it was almost three times if you were to go with like custom cabinets. And, you know, for anyone, I think that has been in real estate, like IKEA has done a fantastic job of branding themselves as a really, really smart and modern solution without sacrificing quality. Like, so to your point, the pulls and the handles and stuff were good, but the cabinets themselves, the entire systems in many ways, like some of the features that they had, I thought were really, really cool. It was my favorite room in the house, not just because I cooked in it, but because it was really, really beautiful. So cool. All right. So his fourth tip was actually about backyards. And again, I do not have a lot of experience with backyards, but I'm just going to go ahead and read exactly what his quote was. And it was, if I have a busted up patio or concrete and I don't want to spend thousands of dollars fixing it up, I'll just build a wooden deck right on top of the existing concrete. It's a lot less expensive. You cover up ugly concrete by building a deck and you're done. I really, really like this trick, especially in recent years as I've come to appreciate or sort of fall into the world of like fancy barbecues. And so like big green eggs and those kinds of things like the patio. And actually, I would also say over the last year, like given the amount of time that people have spent at home, people who have a patio in the backyard, I think, have found themselves out there, whether it's working or just kind of grilling and trying to get a semblance of being outside while still kind of social distancing and being at home. So I love that for all of those reasons, but also because that's really, really smart. I remember knowing several people who had like those typical little concrete pads, and there's nothing particularly great or sexy about it, but I never thought to just sort of build on top of it. And if you think about it, that's what people do inside their homes all the time. If you've ever watched HGTV, there's always that start of a project where they're digging below the crusty linoleum or something like that to see if there's something worth salvaging. This is not exactly the same, but it's more like there's a time sometimes to discover to see if there's something underneath, but there's also a time to just say, hey, you can cover it up and just put this on top of it. So I thought that was a really quick fix.
Yeah, my dad is backyard goals. He is the backyard king and always has been. It is probably the place where he invests the most in like home improvement projects.
You're right.
Had just great backyards at their house. But like you said, I'm also loving all of the innovation that I'm seeing around backyards since we've been sheltering in place. It's become one of my favorite categories to browse on Pinterest and YouTube, because I think before all the backyard content was catered to people like my dad who have like these sprawling, you know, acres or just sprawling grass and land in the back. But now home decor and home improvement retailers have kind of wised up and realized that urban backyards exist.
Yeah.
Some of us just have balconies overlooking a little patch of grass or, you know, just a concrete slab out there. And that's worthy of some TLC, too. So if you're flipping up a property that doesn't have a traditional backyard, but does still have some outdoor space, adding some TLC requires some imagination, but the small touches matter. I mean, little things like string lights or a potted plant or even like a small balcony garden can make that area just as inviting as the inside.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are forgetting that most people, well, I shouldn't say that, I can blanket statement, but I think you've got to understand that for people who, like me, who've never had like a yard,
right,
it's never sort of been my thing, even those little spaces can really be like cool. You start to envision what you're going to do out mm-hmm. there. Even if you never do, you still kind of know that you have it and it's an option available for you. And to your point, while it may not necessarily be like an oasis out there or have like trees and all those things, like just having a really well-organized, well-designed outdoor space, investing in that a little bit can make a really big difference in whether or not someone's going to be willing to pay a premium for that house or make an offer or something like that.
Yes. Add a water fixture, yep. You know, just one of them little plug-in ones, give a little babbling creek background noise.
Yeah. No,
it matters. It changes a lot.
It does. It actually makes me think of my mother who, you know, she sold her home a few years ago and she's kind of bounced around to a bunch of different apartments. And while there's obviously a benefit to her being in those apartments, if there's one thing that she has always said that she's missed or would, I mean, literally, I think she would buy a house today if she could just to have an outdoor garden. Like she just loves being outdoors and having an outdoor space. She doesn't have that. So I think that's another great sort of example to kind of highlight that like some people really, really just love that space. And so even if they have a little bit, it could be a slab of concrete, but you sort of added in some shelves or flower pots, a little creative design and a bench or something, it can make all of the difference.
You can get your mom a vertical garden for Christmas so she can compromise on her space.
Yeah, she loves it.
Okay, so his final tip is about closet furnaces. And I, like I said, I had no idea what a closet furnace was.
Because you're a southerner.
Yeah. But basically, this is a hack for expanding the bathroom. So Tariq is kind of double dipping on his second tip, but I see you, bro. Like, double down on bathrooms. So he says, if you look at most bathrooms in older houses, they're typically connected to a hall closet. And in that hall closet, you'll find a coat closet, which is where the furnaces are. What I like to do is expand the bathroom by going into that closet and relocating the furnace somewhere else. So you basically create space by moving the obstruction or the furnace. So if you're flipping a newer house or one that doesn't have this option, I'd actually argue that you can create space in other ways by installing built-ins or shelving in closets. So it's somewhat of an illusion because you're not actually expanding the space, but it does make it more useful. We did this in our last home because the master bedroom didn't have a walk-in closet. It was one of those reach-ins that kind of span the wall and they have the bifold shutters and, you know, there just wasn't this walk-in closet situation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure some of y'all know what I'm talking about. Anyway, we had the contractor add shelves that basically kind of compartmentalized the long open space and we could now hold our shoes, our bags, and it was just a very easy way to increase the value of that long closet without having to completely gut it, just a couple $100 for materials and installing the shelves.
Yeah, this is one of those things where actually I think HGTV does a really great job because, you know, they do all those 3D animations and it allows you to see kind of how they recreate certain spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to like really wrap your head around if you've never done that thing. But I do think that if you, the more you do it, the more you can walk into a space and like they say, see the possibilities.
Yes.
You know, you can see, oh, we can move this over here. But I will say when it comes to like moving things like furnaces, I've never done that. I would take his word on it 100%. That would freak me out just because I'd be thinking about, you know, what some of the other issues are. But the reality is more often than not, all you're really doing is, especially if you're talking about pipes that are going up into walls or even into ceilings in the case of our old home, it's really just a matter of like kind of rerouting something, extending it, mm-hmm. getting an elbow to make it go, you know, up and around something if there's something obstructing the view. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, and those little differences can make such a huge difference because it could be like for shoes or bags or just bulky items, comforters.
Yes.
That was always a hard part for us. It's like, where do you put, you got three comforters and you need a closet
just
for these
comforters.
Three comforters.
Comforters and luggage.
Yeah.
Take
up a lot of space.
They're very bulky. Yeah. But if you do it right, it can save you money on other things. Like we haven't had a dresser in years because we get so crafty with like how we design the shelving in our closet. So we save on other pieces of furniture with just a well-designed closet.
Yep.
All right. So Tarek's final thoughts for flippers were, if you are new to it, then you need to get educated. But if you're experienced, you need acquisitions and to hire a team of leaders and managers that you can delegate to as you scale. I love that. And I think it's pretty universal advice if you're a flipper or if you're any sort of other small business owner or entrepreneur.
I love it. Why don't we roll right into final thoughts?
Yes. So my final thoughts are, we spent a lot of time talking about the house itself today, but like almost all businesses, flipping is ultimately a relationship game. In other words, your flip is only as good as the people who help you with it, like contractors, agents, the whole list that's involved in the supply chain. And if you don't have a great eye for talent or you haven't worked on your own leadership and development skills, your flip is going to be much harder. Tarek says that he struggled with that at first and ultimately had to use executive recruiters to get the right folks, but it can be done. So let his story be an example. Building the right team might mean taking a hit on the margin at first, but if you do it right, you can more than make up for it in the future.
No, I love that because I know a lot of people who are handy around the house, and because of that, they think that they can be flippers because they can save a lot of
right.
money. But there's a lot that they're not factoring in.
Yes.
And so especially if you're talking about taking on projects that you've never done before, or tackling things like electrical work. I mean, you get that wrong. I mean, that can be a very, very expensive and dangerous situation. So it really, really is about building a team. My final thoughts are this, is that house flipping, probably due to people like Tarek and, you know, HGTV, is like really, really popular. It's very exciting. People see these numbers and they watch a couple show up or someone show up with a sledgehammer, and it goes from ugly to absolutely stunning and gorgeous in 30 minutes. That's television.
Right.
That's
TV
entertainment.
<magic.
laughs> That is not how it happens. It is a really, really hard job. And so to his point, it requires all of those things. But I'll call out a couple of things that I don't believe were mentioned in the article, which is the importance of credit.
Yeah.
The reality is you are likely going to have to take out a couple loans in some cases, unless you just happen to have a boatload of cash to purchase properties on the cheap, which means the better your credit is, the better terms you can negotiate or sort of leverage capital in order to get you out of the gates. That's really, really important. Second thing I would say is cash on hand. So even if you don't have a lot, you want to have as much as you can because you're going to need it. Even the slightest delays or hiccups that you find can end up costing you thousands and thousands of dollars. Doesn't mean you can't make up for it when you sell it, but in those moments, especially if you are credit strapped or you don't have any more cushion on a card or other cards, you're going to need to have some cash on hand. So make sure you build that into it. And last but not least, as Tarek said, as Kirsten mentioned, having a team is really, really important. We find you want to have not just one team, you want to have an A team and a B team, and in some cases, have a C team as well. Somebody that you can call, they tend to be a little harder to sort of keep a C team, because if you're not keeping them busy enough, there's no real reason for them to keep engaged with you. But you definitely want to have backup plans on backup plans on backup plans. And my last final thought.
Your final thought.
Yeah, would be like, don't be afraid to spend money to, don't be afraid to spend money or to lose margin if it means that you will finish a project sooner. I think in my guesstimate would be that you're likely your first, second, or third flip is really just about a learning experience. You learning the market, learning the process, building a relationship with these contractors. By the time you start to hit your stride, it's really just a matter of managing those processes that you've already created. You've already solved those problems. So the next time that it arises, you already got a system in place and you can kind of solve for it. And that's really when you start to see much more successful projects. So if you're interested in house flipping, check out the latest issue of Success Magazine with an article featuring Flip or Flop star Tarek El Moussa. It's really, really cool.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. If you liked what you heard, flip on over to that ratings and review page and leave us a 5-star rating and review. We will see y'all next week.
I see what you did there.